Welcome to Help and Hope, a podcast of CCEF.
Hi, welcome to Help and Hope. My name is Winston Smith, counselor and faculty member at the CCEF, and I am your host today. And I'm joined here by
Mike Emlett. I'm also a counselor and faculty member at CCEF.
And Chris Carter, I'm a CCEF student.
Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
We got a question from someone about bipolar disorder, so let me read it to you. Our adult daughter was just diagnosed with bipolar disorder after a manic break with reality. During the course of the manic episode, she quit her job and acted out, which culminated in a hospitalization. We moved her back into our home as she has no family or financial resources. We've learned of a residential Christian-based program which we'll be sending her to. We've assembled a good care team for her, but are a little overwhelmed by the prospects of the implications of this disorder. Do you have any advice for us on how to deal with this situation? Well, it's tough.
It is. The first thing that I would say is there are already clearly important things that are happening. The fact that they're is already a team of people surrounding this woman is really critical. I think that's one of the most critical things in ministry to an individual who's struggling with bipolar disorder is having other people in the loop who can walk alongside them, particularly as they move either towards the depressive side of things or more towards a mania. So that the fact that a care team has already been assembled, I think, is really critical. As part of that, I think it's a good idea to actually with the person who's struggling together, coming up with a kind of crisis plan. Okay, if this happens again, or if I start to move in this direction again, here's what I'd like to see happen. Here's how I want people to come around me and help me. I think that's a part of that care. So that's one, I think, really important and good thing that's happening. Presumably, I mean, I don't obviously know anything about the residential treatment facility that they're talking about, but presumably that is a place where this woman would be getting counseling, which I think is really critical. It's not just medical or medication management of this problem, but counseling. And she's likely to be experiencing a lot of shame for the things she did during the manic phase. She's likely to be experiencing a lot of fear. What does the future look like with this problem? And confusion. Who am I really? What's my normal state? So I think there's that the counseling piece for her is really important.
Let me help us to kind of hone in on one specific aspect of this problem. You know, notice that she was hospitalized during a manic phase. And I think, you know, I'm just based on experience and people I've talked to, it's when people have that manic break with reality that is so overwhelming, and the prospect of that happening again. I'm kind of assuming that's kind of behind this comment, that they're overwhelmed by the prospects, the implications. Like we struggle with, we grieve for people who are depressed, but it's not quite as scary as someone who's in a truly manic phase. And you know, and to the average person, they're doing stuff that we just would call crazy. I feel like all of a sudden my spouse, my child has lost their mind. I have no idea what to say to them. Can I say anything? I have no idea how to restrain them or control them. I'm just kind of guessing those would be the sorts of more specific questions that would fall out of this one. I mean, if we were just to imagine if we were really able to talk to this person, and they were to say, "Well, I don't. If they go into a manic phase again, I don't even know what to say. Is there anything I can say to them that's helpful at all when they're experiencing mania?"
I think one of the important things there is to start to learn some of the, if you will, early warning signs. Of of mania. Generally, a person is going to, I mean, there are people that can, if you will, cycle pretty rapidly, but in general, there is a period of time where the person is sleeping less. And yet they remain energetic. They tend to be very productive, and feel like they're being productive. They maybe are more sociable, maybe unusually sociable. Those actually are the early stages and places where, if you've had these kinds of conversations when a person's mood is in the normal phase, you can actually kind of plan that ahead. You know, when you see these things happening, I'm giving you authorization to speak into my life. And part of the step of faith for the person in that phase, if you will, of the problem is, will I listen to the counsel of others? Will I accept the input and instruction of others?
So you're saying you can talk about what to do with the person before it happens.
Yes. I think that's really critical.
Creating tracks to run on before it happens. So you're not coming up with a plan in the crisis necessarily. Actually do some preventative care here.
That's right. Because there are obviously in a decent percentage of folks who move into mania, they actually move into psychosis. And so when the person really
well, go ahead. What do you mean?
Yeah, well, they really do have a break with reality. And so to try to speak into that situation in someone who may be hallucinating or having delusions about who they are and what their reality is, you may not be able to speak into it at that point. That's why I think having that plan and recognizing early on, hey, I'm moving in that direction, because early mania can actually feel pretty energetic and good, you know, particularly for someone that's experienced the other side. You know, if they've experienced the pendulum swing over to serious depression, and now they're actually moving toward mania, that feels good. It feels energetic. It feels productive.
A lot better than being depressed.
Right, right. But that can lead, you know, to true mania.
So part of what can make it hard for you to help them at that point is because they don't feel like they're getting worse. They feel like they're getting better.
Right.
And it feels like the mania is kind of their friend at that point.
That's why people will commonly stop their medications, because if their mood starts to become a bit elevated, it's sort of like, well, why do I need this? I feel really good, and that actually can be something that ends up precipitating a worse crisis.
So A, talk to them when they're not manic at all, and come up with a plan. B, understand that once someone has had a psychotic break, there may be almost nothing that you can say to them. And at the point, I'm assuming you're trying to protect them.
You're trying to keep them safe. Yeah. I mean, she was hospitalized presumably for that reason.
Not to stretch this out too long, but what about that middle ground when they're in that place where they are kind of becoming manic? They're not responding to whatever tracks have been laid, if you've laid them. What kind of things might you say or ask people to consider saying to the loved one who's entering that manic phase and is not really responding?
I mean, that's a particularly hard situation. I've been in that situation where you've actually implored people, and yet they're not at a place of true danger to themselves or to others, and so you continue to try to speak truth. You bring more people to speak truth.
Bring more relational influence to bear.
And sometimes that makes a difference. Also, if you've written out a plan and the person has signed it, that becomes a document that you can show them. Now, again, they may in the moment say, "I'm just going to disregard that," but they're making a choice in that moment. Mm-hmm. They are.
I just have one One story that stands out to me, a man told me about his brother, who I don't think this is like a genuine sort of bipolar kind of situation, but it's someone who was depressed and ended up kind of in a having a psychotic break. So this man's brother was thinking that people were trying to harm him, poison him, tap his phone. And this man told me that he, what he ended up appealing to and having the most influence on this depressed man who was having the break, he ended up kind of saying just very simple things like, you know who I am. You know that I'm your brother. You know that I have always loved you. You know that I've never acted against you. Mm-hmm. I love you. I need you to trust me right now. You know, you can trust me. I love you. You can trust me. I need you to listen to me. Just very sober, sincere appeals to love, you know?
Yeah.
And he was able to talk his brother into going to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Just the force of that loving relationship, you know, was able to overcome the wall of the psychosis in that instance.
Yeah. I think one of the subtexts of what we're saying is that in people, when they're diagnosed with bipolar, tend to think on one axis, you know, depression, normal mood, mania. That's the axis they think on. But I think it's really critical to realize that there's also the axis of, living in faith in a Godward way versus not in a non-Godward way, that it is possible to struggle with depression or even mania and not necessarily move in an ungodly direction.
Mm-hmm.
But you really do need people around you to help with that.
But because none of us should be trying to live in faith by ourselves.
Exactly.
We all need to live in community.
That's
not
right.
Just folks who have one disorder or the other. Yeah.
How relevant do you find it in that process to appeal to some of the motivations, desires, events that happen inside of those manic episodes? Is there a tendency to just to treat those as abnormal and you focus on other things, or do you use the things that happen in those episodes, or is it a both and depending on the people? I'll just in the counseling process, does how much overlap is there? Is that helpful? Or something that's more helpful to be distinct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a both and. I mean, I think because of the confusion, particularly people who experience both serious depression and mania as part of the bipolar swing, it's really hard for them to have an anchor in terms of identity and who am I. And I think, so I spend a lot of time talking about their connection with Jesus and their identity with him. I think that's foundational. The things that happen during a manic episode in many ways are intensified expressions of the flesh. You don't need to be in a manic episode to choose to go out and sleep with a prostitute or use cocaine or have a purchase that you didn't need to make. So those in one sense are garden variety desires, but they're particularly ramped up, and I think there's a physiological ramping up that happens that pushes in that way. But they are issues of the heart,
yeah, amplifications of what's already present. Yeah,
no, that's very helpful. So because those things can sometimes be so vivid or so extreme,
mm-hmm.
so exaggerated as an extension of someone's character, it mm-hmm. might be very important for most people to get outside of that box and mm-hmm. talk about identity with Christ first before getting to a more mature process where you move back in to those motivations and desires mm-hmm. inside of an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for coming, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. For more information about CCEF and its resources, visit us on the web at ccef.org.